Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Me Lost Choirs and Period Instruments present Of Love, Loss, and Longing, East and West, 12th to 19th century. Me Lost explores theme of love and loss through a range of historic, poetic, and musical expressions from Europe, Persia, Syria, and Al-Andalus, featuring the music of Isaac Monteverdi, Handel, Ibn al-Khattabi, Darwish, and more. Join us on Saturday, June 13th, 7:30 p.m. at St. John the Apostle Church, 88th Patrick Street, Kingston, with guests Sadif Amini, Iranian Santur, Arzang Rafai, Iranian Tar, Abu Aramzanidin, and Darbuka. Tickets are $30, available online at milosearlymusic.org or at Novel Idea.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you've got me for just under 60 minutes. And on today's show, I've got a wake-up call. All right. My guest today is L.A.-based singer-songwriter Lucy Clearwater, whose debut full-length album is called People Not Possessions. And it's a title that tells you quite a bit about who she is before you even hear a note. Lucy started playing violin at the age of 4, and by the time she was 12, she was teaching on the instrument. My goodness! Then she started writing songs on the guitar, and she hasn't looked back. She grew up in the Bay Area, moved to LA, spent some time in Berlin, even learned enough German to write and record an entire album in the language. But at the heart of this new record of hers is something simpler. It's a belief in community, connection, and the people who shape our lives. In our chat, we get into the long road to making a debut full-length album, recording live to tape with producer Tyler Chester, writing songs about friendship, grief, and love, and one specifically about the perils of the intersection between friendship and love. Here's my chat with Lucy Clearwater.
There we go. Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well. I'm very well. Nice to see you.
It's good to see you, too. Where are you?
I am in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, so we are bi-coastal today,
wow.
Aren't we?
That's fun.
Are you on the West Coast?
I am. I'm in LA. Just woke up, having my morning coffee.
What kind of coffee you take? What's your go-to?
So I recently got like a Breville espresso machine,
sure.
And I'm obsessed with it.
Sure.
And I got it on Facebook Marketplace. And it was like $300, which was incredible. And it's some of the best espresso. I would say I could start my own coffee shop. It's pretty good.
With that coffee machine, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one you'll need, hey?
I think so.
You just need one pull.
Yeah. The line would get really long because it would be really slow process.
Maybe you want that, hey? Maybe you want people walking by being like, what's up with this place?
Yeah.
The water wouldn't be so clear. It'd be dark water, actually. Would you call it dark water coffee, Lucy Darkwater?
Oh, whoa. Oh, my gosh. You're giving me merch ideas.
Okay.
That's actually such a good idea. Yeah.
Maybe you just woke up, though, right?
Yeah, that's true. But I've been thinking it would be really cool to have, like, coffee merch. I'm always trying to think of, like, fun new ways to have DIY, like, more interesting merch ideas. Coffee would be really cool.
Yeah. What would you do? Are you talking like coffee merch or coffee beans themselves? You'd befriend a roaster of some kind.
I would have to partner up with a roaster, I think. And then.
And it'd be called Dark Water.
Is that Dark Water? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you get 10%.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. I was going to ask for 6. So I'm already 4 hours ahead and actually 4 percentage points. So that's good.
Funny.
If I have this right, your mother started teaching you violin when you were 4 years old?
Yep. Yeah. Wow.
Do you remember your first lesson? Or, you know, do you have memories of, I mean, you clearly know how to play. You remember how to play violin, yeah. But do you have memories of the lessons?
I don't remember my very first lesson, but I do remember my mom giving me my first violin on, it was my fourth birthday present.
Wow.
And I remember her handing it to me. It's a very vague little memory, but yeah. And then she taught me private lessons all through my childhood. Yeah.
And sent you a bill when you were 18. And what do you owe her?
Oh my gosh, so much. Yeah, I don't know how I'll ever pay her back, but
yeah, sure. Wow. So you started playing classical violin at 4 all through your childhood. So that's like, that was your first instrument. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining. That's where it all began. And then you started playing guitar with your dad at 6. Do I have that right?
Maybe a little later, like 8, 9-ish. And I just,
so young.
Yeah. That's learned like maybe 2 chords and then did that for a couple of years until when I was, like, I think in high school was when I got more really into playing guitar, and I took maybe 6 months of lessons from a local teacher who worked at this like beautiful, like fine guitar shop with lots of handmade guitars and beautiful instruments. So we did like finger style lessons for a while, and that's where I found my guitar, which is like still my main guitar that I play all the time.
Oh, no kidding, hey?
I would show up for a lesson, and it would come after school, so I didn't have an instrument with me, and he would say, you could just pick whatever guitar you want off the wall for today's lesson. So I would just try out different guitars every time. And one day I walked in, and it was like, it just felt like it was out of a movie. There was like this one guitar, and it felt like there was like angels singing and this like light around it. It was like, and I just walked towards it. The second I picked it up, I was like, I think I just need to figure out how to buy this guitar. Like, this has to be my guitar. And yeah, it's from a maker named Tony Yamamoto. And he recently stopped building just a couple years ago. So now it's there's a limited number of these floating around there. And I feel really, really lucky.
No kidding.
One.
Did you, have you had an opportunity to meet Tony Yamamoto? Is that his name?
Yeah. I got to meet him. I think it was around the time when I bought the guitar. And I haven't seen him since, but yeah, I think he moved back to Japan, and
How did you said I had to figure out a way, as you heard the angel singing, to buy this guitar, and then you did. How did you do it?
I took a loan from my parents, I paid them back.
Your mom's like, you're going to owe me several thousand dollars anyway.
Yeah. So they helped me out, and I paid them back every month.
Really? They put you on a payment plan. Good for you.
Yeah. It probably took a couple of years. It was a really, really pricey instrument. So
I imagine they were, game to play on that one. They're like, she wants a handcrafted Yamamoto guitar. Yeah. Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it was partially maybe one of their ways of like teaching me about credit and like how to take a loan. I feel like there were multiple aspects going on there. I was like 16, I think, when this happened. And so they were like, this is a good time for her to learn how to figure out how to do money. I was like, great.
Yeah, sure.
but I mean, I feel really grateful. I think they really like showed me how to be independent and how to do things on my own. And they didn't just like spoon feed me things. Yeah. They didn't just like, they taught me how to work. And I actually started working when I was 12. Teaching violin.
Oh, teaching, but you were, God. Most kids are, I don't know, but most kids, in my mind, most kids are starting lessons around then. You're already teaching by 12.
Yeah, well, my grandma's neighbor wanted to learn, and I had been playing since I was 4, so I thought I could make a little, $10, teach a little 30-minute lesson, and then that just expanded until I had a whole bunch of students I would see every week, so I was... It felt like having a full-time job while being in high
grade
school.
6 or like moving forward beyond there. So you taught through high school.
Yeah. My kind of like music studio, grew until when I was like 17, 18 at the end of high school. I think I had about 30 students would see. On the weekdays after school, I would go home and teach all afternoon and then squeeze in a little bit of homework. Yeah, it was pretty wild, but I really just followed in my mom's footsteps with that, and that set me up pretty well to then move to LA when I was 18 and have a little bit of a kind of cushion to try to start my life off of.
Do you mean, a financial cushion, like money that you'd
make? Financial cushion, yeah.
Did you continue teaching when you moved to LA at 18?
Mm-hmm.
And you moved from the Bay Area, is that right? Like the East Bay Area?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you kept teaching in LA?
Kept teaching, yep. And then I stopped teaching when I started getting touring opportunities and started hitting the road with my own music and realized it was just hard to keep doing both. And that was a really exciting moment for me because I had always kind of, I was looking for when's the day when I can kind of let go of that and just be a full-time artist.
And what was the day?
It was 2023, I want to say.
Yeah, that's the year.
I think, yes, that's the year. That's I don't remember the day.
But you probably remember like the thing that happened that allowed you to shift out.
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, it happened kind of incrementally. Like I would start going on little tours and I kind of had to just tell my students like, hey, I'm going to be gone for a little while. And then once that started happening too frequently, I started like cutting down on students slowly over time. So it wasn't really like one moment where it all shifted. But I will say it was probably around when I started touring with Victoria Canal. She brought me on as a support act on her tour, and I was also playing in her band. And we went all over the US, Europe, and UK. So we were out for, it was like a good chunk of the year.
Wow.
And yeah, that was kind of the point where it was like, okay, this is, I got to let go of teaching altogether.
Mm-hmm. So. It's still fresh, I guess. Do you miss teaching?
I miss some of the kids. Like I miss some of the sweet little people that I was giving lessons to, but I don't think that teaching was really my calling. It didn't really make me super happy the way that like doing music full time, the way that I do now feels so fulfilling. Yeah. And I didn't get that same feeling from teaching.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I spoke with Christine Bougie on the show recently. She's an incredible guitar player and she also teaches, but she talked about a moment when she met many years ago, Bill Frisell, who was like an idol of hers, someone to whom she looked up, and they met and he recognized in her an undeniable talent and said, and this was like a real moment for her, and said, like, you have the thing. If you want to do it, you have it, go do it. And then she's held on to that and has continued, and because it was such an important moment to her. And she's tried, when she has students who she identifies as having the thing or could have the thing, she really makes a point of saying it. Did anything like that ever happen to you? I'm just asking because you started playing so young and then you started teaching.
Yeah, I think there was something in me that just always, I feel like I honestly always knew that this was just what I was ultimately going to do. And teaching for me was always just like a means to an end. When I was like 12 years old, I entered a songwriting competition that was through like a creative writing thing at my school. And it did really well. It like won at the state level and then it got second place nationally. And I think that was something that gave me like a confidence of like, oh, I'm actually good at this. This isn't just something that I want to do. This is something that I think I have an actual chance at being able to do. And then from that point on, it was like, I just never really looked back. It was kind of, this is the thing. Started writing songs, started playing gigs, and that's just kind of always been the thing.
Who won that? Was it Taylor Swift? Taylor Swift won that, didn't she? She was 14.
I actually don't know. I don't know what it was. It was funny. It was a competition through like the PTA. It was like some national PTA thing.
Do you still know how to play the song? Do you ever play the song?
Mm-mm. No, I don't know how it goes. I haven't. I don't remember.
Sure. I feel like you're being a little evasive at the moment. You've written some songs since then that you're a little more fond of, hey?
Yes, I would say so.
Well, here's one of them. It's Lucy Clearwater with What's Mine. More with Lucy after this.
My feet tread on stolen ground. My heart beats on borrowed time. My mind Sometimes what's mine isn't really mine. What's mine isn't really mine. My future is out of my control. My money comes and then it goes. I rent a house I can't afford to buy. What's mine isn't really mine. What's mine isn't really mine. My sweater is a hand-me-down. I'm a visitor in my hometown. My books belong to the library. My teeth belong to the tooth fairy. My job don't measure what I'm worth. My body will turn back into dirt. Some say the dead never really die. And I say, what's mine is never really mine. And my pain is felt by anyone who loves me. And my living room is better when there's company. My path sure ain't the lonesome kind. But what's mine isn't really mine. My guitar's made for passing round the fire. My name is just a sound, and I'm a person. I'm afraid I'll even lose myself along the way. Oh, oh, all my friends are people, not possessions. And when someone goes away, so I hope you'll stick around a while. And I hope that I can make you smile, yeah, yeah. Well, my old guitar is up for sale. My money comes and then it's spent. And I'll never own this house. I'll never own this house. I'll never own this house. I'll rent.
Well, that is pretty. That is Lucy Clearwater with What's Mine. Lucy is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake. Now back to our chat. The new album, your debut full length, right, is called People Not Possessions. Or is it People Aren't Possessions? It's People Not Possessions,
people,
right?
People Not Possessions, yeah. I think this is like a big question out there because...
Well, way to go. Way to create some mystique around your album.
Yeah, it's with the little like not equals sign.
That's right.
In the title there. But yeah, it's People Not Possessions, which if you listen to the record, you'll hear that's one of the lyrics in the first song on the record called What's Mine. Yeah. And the line is, all my friends are people, not possessions. And I just kind of took that and made that the title. So
yeah, that's a beautiful song. If I have it right, when your debut EP, Feel Again, like it expanded out of that song, right? You wrote a song called Feel Again and things sort of came from there. Okay.
Yeah.
Did something similar happen on this album?
This album was more just like I had made a handful of EPs and I was just like, I feel like I'm at the point where it's time to make a full record. And so I looked back on all the songs that I had written over the last 5 years or so, found stuff that didn't make their way onto different EPs and just like newer stuff I'd been writing and sort of just kind of found all the ones that fit together. So it wasn't so much like, I love when I hear about artists that are like, oh yeah, I like went into the woods and I like wrote the album and then we took it into the studio. It wasn't one of those. I'm thinking that might be something that I want to try for my next album. But for this one, it's really just like a combination of songs from throughout my 20s. And that's part of what I love about it is like, it just, when I like listen back to the record, it feels like I'm just kind of reflecting on my experience as a person in their 20s, traveling and living in LA. And it kind of takes you through different relationships, different just like existential topics that I've kind of grappled with, grief, like losing family members, things like that. So it's, yeah, that's sort of it. It didn't really stem from one song in particular. It was that the title ended up being something that I feel like is just a theme in my life that feels important to me. People, not possessions, just this idea that I love community, and that's a huge part of my life. I like fostering community, focusing on people as opposed to things and belongings. I live a pretty modest life, and I'm super, super privileged, but I would say I'm not really like a materials person. And so people, not possessions, just kind of felt like an overall sentence that matches kind of where I'm at and what the record feels like to me. And then we kind of made the whole record really collaborative as well. So we brought in so many friends and people all over LA to come in and be part of it, play on the record, feature on the record. And that also kind of led it towards feeling like, okay, people, this record is about people. It's about friendship, connection, community.
Yeah. You know, when we met in New Orleans at Folk Alliance in January of this year, you were telling me about the dinners that and concerts, I guess, that you host at your place. I imagine, are you sitting in that place currently? Like it's behind you?
Yeah, it's just right through the door over there. We have in the living room.
Tell me about those and the sort of the genesis of that idea. It doesn't surprise me to hear you talk about the importance of community, having known that about you.
Yeah, so basically this was maybe 2018 or 2019, it all started from this one day when I was just feeling sad. And I don't remember what I was going through. It was a breakup or something, but I wasn't feeling very good. I texted a group chat of just a handful of my friends and said, "Hey guys, like I'm just like not feeling good. I like could use some support." And this little flock of my friends came over. There was maybe six or seven of them. They came over, they all brought me like food and just like sweet things. And then we ended up naturally just sitting around in my living room, and they each started playing me songs that they had been working on, which is just something that my friends, we love to just show each other things that we're working on in general. But it just kind of happened in this way where everybody went around and each friend played one song. And by the time it got around the circle and it got back to me, I was like feeling so much better. And I just, it completely cured whatever pain I was experiencing. And we had a beautiful evening. And at the end of it, we were like, we should just do this all the time. So I started hosting these events, and I would just reach out to musicians that are either friends of mine or people that I kind of look up to, admire, like people within my larger community. And I would just curate like a different group of people every time. And we started doing it roughly once a month. And it wasn't meant to be something formal. It wasn't meant to be this like structured thing, but it just kind of turned into this thing. And we started calling it the Song Share. And it's a potluck. So like the initial day when my friends came over, the whole theme is like you bring something to share and you bring a song. So if somebody brings, you know, a salad that they made or some pasta or whatever, and then we eat and have a drink and we all sit around in the living room and everyone plays a tune. And it just really turned into this like big, beautiful thing. And it's led to so many incredible connections and new friendships for me. And I love watching my friends meet each other, people who I didn't know already know each other, or people who I'm surprised haven't met in LA yet. And it's become pretty international. I found a friend who is hosting a very similar event in London, and we decided to kind of try to bridge our communities. So we put it under one umbrella. We started a big group chat and made it so that anyone who's part of that scene in London can then come to the LA ones, and everyone in LA can go to the London ones.
Excellent.
And it's in Berlin as well. It's in Copenhagen. I'm like finding these communities everywhere, and then they kind of already exist, and then just trying to like bridge the gap and combine them so that when our friends are all traveling, we can like be part of that in other places.
So when you say that you're bridging these two communities or multiple communities between Berlin, Copenhagen, London, and LA and elsewhere. Do you already know the people or in Berlin or Copenhagen or you've sought them out or they've sought you out or you've been connected somehow?
Yeah, like I would know like one or two people that I like hear about is doing something similar. And then or somebody reaches out to me on Instagram and says, uh-huh. Hey, there's this like I just went to this event and it reminded me of the thing that I went to at your house time. Like, this is so cool. And then they'll introduce me to whoever's hosting. And then, yeah, it's just kind of like this big spider web is just kind of expanded.
That's lovely. Have you been yourself to the one in London, Berlin, Copenhagen?
I've been to the one in London. I haven't been to the one in Copenhagen. That the one in Copenhagen was started by a friend of mine who attended one in LA, and then he was just like, this is so cool. I want to start hosting this. Like, can you kind of show me the ropes? And then I just kind of showed him what my system is and how I run it, and he started doing the same thing. Mm. And the Berlin one, I actually was living in Berlin on and off from 2022 through 2024. I was kind of splitting my time. I'd do about half the year in Berlin, half the year in LA. And so while I was there and the song share was already kind of up and running in LA, I had a friend take over and host a couple song shares while I was out of town. And when I was in Berlin, I started hosting the same thing there.
So. Oh, and then handed it off to someone basically.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Now, what took you to Berlin? Because you learned how to speak German, and not only that, but then you started writing songs in German and then recorded an album in German?
Yeah. So this was in 2018, I did a little DIY tour, took a backpack and a guitar, and I traveled all over Europe and just played little house concerts and open mics and stuff like that, and just took trains everywhere and a little solo trip. And I, out of everywhere that I went when I was in Berlin in particular, I just met a lot of really cool people, felt really welcomed, and met a lot of music community there, and sort of got this idea in my head of like, maybe one day I'll like live in Berlin. And I went back a year later. I should say it was 2017 was the first time. Then 2018, I went back to Germany, deepened relationships with people that I had met there, and then came back to LA and really had this idea that I wanted to live there. But I knew I needed to like give LA some more time and build something that would be strong enough that I could like leave and come back and still feel like I had something here. So I was like, I'm going to put in a strong 5 years in LA before I think about leaving. And I did. And then in 2020, when everything locked down, I really wanted to go to Germany that year, and then I couldn't. And so instead I was like, I guess I'll just fill all this new free time stuck at home during lockdown with learning German on Duolingo.
Okay, so that's how you did it.
Wow. That was it, yeah. Yeah, so I would just wake up every morning and make my coffee, sit on the couch and do Duolingo for an hour or two, pretty much every day throughout the entire pandemic.
Good for you.
And so that was how I learned German.
And then you became, like, by the time you got to Germany in 2022 or whatever it was, a year and a half, 2 years later, you were able to, like, you were fluent?
I wouldn't say I'm completely fluent, but I got close enough that I could really enjoy it and have fun conversations.
I guess that's my question. Yeah, it's not about technicalities. It's like you enjoyed your life.
Yeah, it was
Berlin
really fun. And you know, so many people speak English there. So I had to kind of like try to convince friends that I was making to like try to talk to me in German. But it was really, really fun. And then I had some touring opportunities over there, met so many incredible musicians, and had these German songs that I had written and recorded in 2020 or 2021, I think was when I recorded them.
Oh, so you wrote the songs before you went, I cut you off there. You were learning German in pandemic year
LA,
one. You were learning how to speak German in LA on Duolingo. Mm-hmm. And then when did you start writing songs?
I started writing them like kind of, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 months in. So, and then I went and I stayed at a little cabin, and this was my little Bon Iver moment. And I like went to a cabin in the woods and brought a microphone and a small interface and was there for about 2 months and just recorded all my German songs and captured like the sound of the rain on the roof and just like went out and got field recordings when I was on hikes. And just, it's very like nature-y sounding, the production on the record. And just, produced the whole thing myself, had a couple friends like play drums or bass on it. And then, took that to Germany. And it was so fun.
You can hear the rain on the roof on this track. From her 2023 Augenlieder, this is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Lucy Clearwater with Ant Wooten. More of my chat with Lucy after this. From her 2023 German language release, Augenlieder, that is Lucy Clearwater with Ant Wooten. Now back to my chat with Lucy. I'm fascinated by this. I mean, I speak French. I've recorded in French. I've translated songs I've written in English into French and recorded those. But I've never written a song start to finish in French. And you, that's how you wrote these. You wrote them in German.
I wrote them in German. Yeah. I had to use Google Translate a couple times, like to try to figure out how to say things or to find like synonyms for words that would then maybe lead to a better rhyme. So that was interesting because it was really hard to figure out how to rhyme in German because my vocabulary just wasn't vast enough to think of, you know, in English, like I can think of so many different ways to say the same exact thing. And so you have options to find things that can rhyme. But in German, I just was really limited with my knowledge. So I had to look things up a few times. One thing that it really taught me was that I think I had been writing and operating in a way where I felt like I needed to rhyme a lot more than I think is actually necessary in music.
Right.
Sometimes it's really beautiful to just say exactly what you mean and not care if it rhymes. And that can lead to a much more powerful song. So that it actually influenced my writing in English because I learned a lot from trying to write in another language that I now apply to when I'm writing in English. And so, and really the biggest takeaway was like, just say exactly what you mean. Like sometimes you don't have to try to be poetic or say things in some like mystical way. Sometimes maybe just like exactly the thing might be the most powerful way to get the point across.
And
I'm trying to do that a lot more now with my current songwriting. And I feel like you can hear that quite a bit in the record.
Can you give an example, like from People Not Possession?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, gosh, so much of it to me just feels really direct. Reconciliations, for example, this is a song I wrote about my grandfather who passed away. And like the opening line of the song is just, it wasn't always easy loving you. And it's just like, I could try to paint some picture and be ethereal and all this stuff, but I felt like I actually just wanted to say exactly the kind of hard truth of it. And I feel like that led to this song feeling like super emotional and impactful. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways you can go to getting the emotional moment. I think this is just one of them. I love other styles of songwriting as well, but yeah, it wasn't always easy loving you, even though you built the family that I was born into. It wasn't always easy loving you, but you gave the gift of music, something I'll never lose. Just kind of saying it, exactly what the thing is.
It sounds like dialogue, you know, and when sung, when accompanied with music, and it's rendered into this really lovely poetry for sure.
Yeah. 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 Another fun one that I like in here is, in the song Almost, I say, I saw you're back in town. Are you sitting in your flat with your coasters and your fake house plants?
Yeah.
And I just thought it's like, yeah, like that's exactly what I thought. That's exactly what I was feeling and picturing. And I'll just say it just like that. So
that song really, really hit me. You've got the lyrics right there. There's something about your turn of phrase with the word almost, right? With the title.
Yeah,
there's
the
something.
I don't miss you so much when you're far away. I miss you when you're close, because when you're gone, I couldn't have you anyway. But when you're near, I could almost.
Get out of here with that. That's so gorgeous.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it felt true to me at the time. It was just like, you know, this was when I was splitting time, living part-time in LA, part-time in Berlin. And there was somebody that I really liked. And whenever I was in LA, it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. And it didn't really eat away at me or anything. I was very present in LA. And then I would go to Berlin and was living just right down the street from this guy. And if he wasn't hitting me up, I was like, oh my God, I miss him. But I never felt that when we were far away from each other. If there's so many songs that are about just missing someone when they're far. And this actually just felt the opposite to me. I was like, when I'm far away, I actually don't feel your presence that much. And I don't mind. But I thought it was kind of a different take on that. And I hope that is like a sentiment that some people can resonate with or connect with.
I connect with it. Resonates with me, Lucy. Here's the tracking question. This is my guest on today's episode, Lucy Clearwater with Almost.
I saw you back in town. Are you sitting in your flat? With your coasters and your fake house plants. You're always on the go, so I can understand. You got tired of how the real ones never last. And I don't miss you so much when you're far away. I miss you when you're close. 'Cause when you're gone, I couldn't have you anyway. But when you're near, I could. Just a cigarette that you're smoking on your balcony again. A few blocks up the road, I'm drinking to forget that you're here, but I'm not hearing from you yet. And I don't miss you so much when you're close.
From her debut full-length album, People Not Possessions, that is Lucy Clearwater with Almost on When We Wake. Now back to the conclusion of my chat with Lucy.
But I'm really excited about this record. I feel really, really proud of it. And it was just so cool to get to make a full-length record. We did a lot of it live to tape. The producer is Tyler Chester, who I had been a fan of his work for such a long time. And just really, really look up to all the records that he's made. So I felt so excited to get to work with him. And then everybody else, all the people who contributed to the record, it just felt like a total dream come true.
So big shift coming into the People Not Possessions.
Yeah.
Bringing in a producer, bringing in a band.
Yeah. The last time I had worked with a formal producer was on my first EP, Feel Again, with Justin Glasgow, and then I went and did three EPs on my own. It was Augenlieder, Casual, and April, and that was all just me in my room, just recording those, doing it really, just kind of DIY bedroom recording vibes. And then that's why I was like really excited to kind of felt like it was just time to step back into working with somebody and having kind of a bigger experience that was expanding outside of my bedroom. So.
Right. Okay. And were they all recorded in, they were songs that spanned years of your life, but were they all recorded in the same session, this album?
For People Not Possessions?
Yeah.
Yeah. We started recording, in December, 2024. And then, it went through until, I think we finished recording in May, 2025. So it was about 6 month period there, and we were supposed to get the bulk of it done in January, and then the huge fires happened in LA, January 7th, I think that was, and so that really put a little wrench in the middle of the process. And so, because everybody started leaving town and a lot of friends were, you know, evacuating, our houses were burning down, it was this like whole huge thing. And So we took a pause for that. Then we got back in for a few more days, took another pause, and we just kind of kept going back and forth. But we did record it all in the same room. It was at Bell Choir Studios, which is where Tyler works out of. It's his spot. And we brought in kind of a core group of musicians to be the foundation for the record. And they didn't hear any of the songs before we got into the studio.
Magic.
And I showed up and Tyler was like, okay, so show the guys the song and then we'll record.
Wow.
And then he would sneakily be recording while I was just like showing them the song, and I didn't even know that was actually a take, because I just figured, well, the guys don't know the song, so like I better just show it to them and then we'll start recording. But Tyler would be recording already, and some of those takes made it onto the record.
And they just started playing along with you?
Yeah, they would just sort of like start playing as they're learning and hearing it and following my changes. And, you know, these guys are so good. They can sort of predict a little bit where it's going to go or what's going to happen next. And then you get these really magical moments because they play things that they maybe wouldn't play if they like knew the song in a really crystallized way.
Can you think of a moment on the album? Like one of the songs that happened that way?
Yeah, it was certainly... What's Mine is one of them. I think part of that is, or maybe the whole thing is a first take. It's first or second take on What's Mine. Same thing with Elephant Monster. That was a really, really early take. It mostly was like the early take. Something that I learned through the process of recording this way was that like kind of after take three or four, it doesn't really get better. You start to kind of lose the this like special magic that's in there on just those first couple takes. And so what's really important and is like for me as an artist, being really prepared going in so that my first couple performances can be strong, because we know that we're going to get the most magic from the band on those early takes. Yeah, it was super cool. It was really exciting. It was a whole new way of recording for me. And now that I've experienced that, I kind of just want to do more of that. It's hard to imagine going back to like building a track, one instrument at a time and like layering.
And you're not playing to a click, obviously, if you're just playing, showing the band, and then that's on the album.
So, yep. Yeah. And I loved that. I think I don't want to do things to click anymore. No. I'm done with click.
Get it. Yeah. It makes the techno remix a little harder, but you know.
Totally. Yeah. Well, we'll see. No one has hit me up yet asking to do a remix, so we'll see. Yet.
It's a fresh baby. Yes. You know, give it some time.
Yeah.
I think we'll go out on the song that ends the album. I saw you play this in the hotel room in New Orleans. You played Love a Friend.
Yeah.
As I recall, I think you played What's Mine, you played Love a Friend, and I don't recall the others, but basically the two songs that bookmark it, What's Mine opens and Love a Friend closes. Tell me about Love a Friend.
Yeah, Love a Friend was actually written, this is the most recently written song on the record. I wrote it while we were already in the recording process of the album. So I must have written this like early 2025, probably January or so. And we didn't have a totally crystallized like these will be the songs on the record. We were just starting to record the ones that we knew were certainly going to be there, and there was a little bit of wiggle room for like, okay, well, if we come up with something else, like maybe something we'll squeeze in here. And so this song, I wrote it and pretty much immediately was like, this has to be on the record. It was, I mean, I'm always most obsessed with the most current thing that I've written.
Well, as we should be, don't you think?
Yeah, it feels the most like current and relatable for myself, is whatever I'm going through. And so I wrote this one, and it has the track right before it, Moments Before I, which is actually a separate track, is part of the same song in my mind. It's through composed, so it's this little instrumental piece that connects seamlessly into Love a Friend. So when I play it live, I always play it with that interlude as the beginning of the song. And yeah, it's a kind of like a classical inspired moment, and then it switches into Love a Friend, which is just about kind of the fear and anticipation that happens when you're starting to feel deeply for somebody that you really care about. So in this context, it was someone who I was really close friends with, and I was starting to have a big, big, big crush, and kind of the hesitation and the fear of like, what's going to happen? Should something happen? Do we cross the line? Do we not cross the line? Is this going to put our friendship at risk? Like all of that, but also the joy of just the feeling of that, like the excitement. It's a very beautiful thing to experience, even though it's like very heightened and a little scary. It's like such a privilege to even just experience that on its own, even if it never does reach something else or progress farther, just having that experience is really beautiful. So that's what the song is about. I wanted it to feel really delicate and fragile and like it could easily just break apart. So we recorded it really minimally. It's just guitar, vocal. It was just a live take of me just playing it and singing it at the same time. And then we added in Will Grafe on playing a little second guitar part on top of that, and my friend Monica Martin came in and sang some harmonies on it. And this one, Tyler, the producer, and I had some disagreement on this one about which take was the right one. I felt like this take, when I first did it, I was like, it just feels like I don't love my vocal performance. It feels like my voice is breaking in a few places. It did, like, I don't think I sang it like beautifully enough. And he was like,
he was so confident this was the take. He was like, no, like, that's definitely the one. And I was like, what the hell, Tyler? Like, no, like, I don't like how I sound on this one. And he really, like, stood his ground. And he was like, you know what? Like, take a break, take a step away from the song, wait a couple weeks, and then re-listen to it and tell me what you think. And I was so stubborn, and I was like, I'm sure you're wrong. You're going to be wrong. And then I went and I took a break and I listened back to it and was like, oh my God, Tyler was so right. Like, this is the take, which was a really interesting experience for me. I've never had that
before. What changed?
I think I just was too, when you're in it and when you're recording, you can just be, you can kind of, you don't have like objective view on anything. You kind of are inside of it too much that you lose, you just don't see it. And Tyler was picking up on some raw emotional like vulnerability that was in that take, and I was feeling so vulnerable that I felt insecure, and I didn't love that take because the performance itself was so vulnerable, and then within vulnerability there's a bit of insecurity that I think kind of goes, just lives alongside vulnerability. And within that, it seeped into how I actually felt about the recording, not just the delivery of the song, which has been an interesting like spiritual thing for me to just see how a lot of times the songs are then really like creating the feeling that I have. It's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? It's been really interesting. It's like, is the song, do I feel like the song is vulnerable because that's what the song's about, or am I now feeling vulnerable as a result of having sang the song? And I don't know. It's been interesting.
What happened, if I may be so bold to ask, with the friend?
Well, it ended up being unfortunately a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is funny. There's a lyric in the song that says, "Wanting is a self-fulfilling habit." But what happened was exactly what the song predicted, which the last line of the song is lose a friend, even though the title is love a friend. It's to either, all that it would take is just a second to either find a lover or lose a friend. And it really just played itself out. I fell in love. We crossed the line. We had a relationship, and it resulted in a loss of pretty much everything, unfortunately. But it's just interesting how the song kind of, I almost feel like, did the song like call this all into being, or was there a part of me that knew, and then writing the song was actually just a way of kind of exploring that in song form? Sometimes it's easier to explore things in song than it is to like really face them in your life. I think a lot of artists experience that. So yeah, it was a pretty sad ending there, but I got this beautiful song out of it that will live with me and hopefully with other people that enjoy it for forever. So
sad ending to that friendship and that relationship, but a really beautiful ending to the album.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Lucy, it's so great to chat, to catch up. Congratulations on the release of a really beautiful album.
Thanks. It's so lovely chatting with you, and I'm excited to listen to more of your podcast and check this all out. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. You ask wonderful questions.
Joy to go away.
the safety of a boundary.
Holy, that is pretty. My goodness. That was Lucy Clearwater with the track that ends her new album, People Not Possessions, with Love a Friend. And that's the track that brings today's episode of When We Wake to its thrilling conclusion. Big, big thanks to my guest, Lucy Clearwater, at Lucy Clearwater on Instagram, lucyclearwater.com. It's got all the info you need to find out where she's going to be playing live, what's going on in her life. I can say that she's hitting the road in a big way for the month of June on the west coast of the U.S. if you're looking for a road trip. I'm at The Andrew Shaver. Our theme song is Got You by my pal and yours, Noah Reed. Thanks for listening.
There's no place like
There really is no place like home. It's where life happens, where dreams are built, and where you land at the end of every day. But what home looks like is different for everyone. Welcome to Finding Your Way Home.